We need cooperation at some level with as many partners in the area as we can get.
President Trump seeks an Asian coalition to pressure North Korea. It's Tuesday, May 2nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us too online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, could President Trump meet Kim Jong-un? Taiwan seeks international inclusion. Detained in China, an American businesswoman is home, seeking new heights and fishing bait. Enjoy the catch of the day with us now on VOA Asia. The United States has reached out to several Asian countries in an effort to pressure North Korea to give up its banned nuclear and missile programs. President Donald Trump on Sunday spoke by phone with the prime ministers of Singapore and Thailand, a day after talking with Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte. He invited all three to visit the White House. A White House spokesman described the conversation Saturday between the Philippine and U.S. presidents as, quote, very friendly, and said the alliance is now heading in a very positive direction. But the White House invitation, said Mr. Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, on U.S. television Sunday, was not to be seen as an endorsement of Mr. Duterte's rights records in his war on drugs.
It's really a matter of a potential for nuclear and massive destruction in Asia and the potential, at least according to North Korea, of developing an ICBM that could, at some point down the line, if we do nothing, potentially reach the United States. This is a different level of a problem that we need cooperation among our partners in Southeast Asia. It doesn't mean that human rights don't matter, but what it does mean is that the issues facing us developing out of North Korea are so serious that we need cooperation at some level with as many partners in the area as we can get.
Bilateral relations soured since Mr. Duterte took office last June when the Obama administration criticized Manila over its lack of respect for the rule of law and its pursuit of drug dealers, a campaign that has killed thousands. East-West Institute senior fellow Gerard Finnan tells VOA's Victor Beatty those relations have improved in recent months and that, he says, could yield three important benefits.
It's important always to keep high-level channels of communication open with our alliance or treaty partners, of which the Philippines is one. The second potentially positive dimension of this story is that thus far, U.S. efforts to encourage Mr. Duterte to respect the rule of law in the Philippines and respect international norms for human rights have been highly unsuccessful. And as many people know, more than 3,000 people have died during the period of time when Mr. Duterte has been in office. This visit, when it takes place, will give Mr. Trump an opportunity to convey to Mr. Duterte the same message that he sent to President Bashar al-Assad of Syria about indiscriminately killing civilian populations. And if Mr. Trump so chooses, it's possible for him to be a positive and moderating influence on Mr. Duterte. The third element of the communication, I think, is that Mr. Duterte has previously spent very little, if any, time in the U.S. So one hopes that his visit will be a chance to observe our society, to interact with Americans, and come to understand that even though we have our own drug problems, drug treatment works and is preferable to the policy he's currently pursuing, which has resulted in the deaths of thousands of Filipinos.
Well, Mr. Trump has spoken with leaders of Japan and South Korea, of course, a number of times, but he's also reaching out to the leaders of Thailand and Singapore. Is the U.S. lining up a large coalition to present a united front against North Korea?
It's a little bit too early to tell for sure, but the fact that the Trump administration is reaching out, having important conversations, and attempting to keep the lines of communication open among some of our strongest partners in the region is something that I think is a positive development.
Does Mr. Duterte remain popular in the Philippines despite what's going on with regard to the drug program?
I believe that his popularity has declined a bit as people come to see that human rights are something that need to be respected and the rule of law is something that needs to be followed. Although initially he was quite popular, I think there has been some decline in recent months.
Gerard Finnan said the war on drugs appeared to moderate following the death in October of a South Korean businessman at National Police Headquarters in Manila. But since then, the pace of that war has intensified. He said there is still a long way to go before the rule of law is respected in the Philippines and people get a fair trial. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on VOANews.com. CIA chief in South Korea for talks on nuclear threat posed by North. Pakistan spy chief to visit Afghanistan. Trump gets tough with South Korea, goes easier on China. Thai Prime Minister accepts Trump's invitation to visit the United States. India's Modi discusses trade and ties with Turkey's Erdogan. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more is found on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues amid some very interesting developments. Just days after reiterating that military options for dealing with North Korea are under consideration, President Donald Trump said he's willing to meet its leader, Kim Jong-un. The potential dramatic shift in the U.S. posture toward the Asian adversary comes as Pyongyang continues to conduct ballistic missile launches and is believed poised to conduct its sixth underground nuclear test. In a television interview aired Sunday on the CBS News program Face the Nation, the president expressed some admiration for Kim.
I can tell you this, and a lot of people don't like when I say it, but he was a young man of 26 or 27 when he took over from his father, when his father died. He's dealing with obviously very tough people, in particular the generals and others. And at a very young age, he was able to assume power. A lot of people, I'm sure, tried to take that power away, whether it was his uncle or anybody else. And he was able to do it. So obviously, he's a pretty smart cookie.
The last high-ranking American official to meet a North Korean leader was then-Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. That encounter in Pyongyang in 2000 was the current leader's father, Kim Jong-il. The United States and North Korea have never had diplomatic relations. Trump has stated repeatedly that all options are on the table regarding Pyongyang, and that conceivably would include diplomacy. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman reports U.S. lawmakers had sharply diverging reactions to President Trump's assertion that he would be, quote, honored to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
While senators across the political spectrum would welcome a peaceful solution to the growing threat posed by Pyongyang's nuclear and ballistic missile program, many, including Democrat Mark Warner, were taken aback by President Trump's suggestion of a possible meeting with North Korea's leader.
I think it's very dangerous when the President of the United States, whether it's talking about the leader of North Korea or the President of the Philippines with his human rights records, blesses these leaders with their dictatorial and anti-human rights attitudes, somehow saying that the United States of America would be honored to receive them. I think it is bad policy and sends a wrong message to millions of people around the world who look to America for moral leadership.
Asked whether anything productive could come from a Trump-Kim encounter, Republican John McCain shrugged.
I doubt it. I think you'd have to have some parameters before such a meeting would take place, but I'd be very skeptical.
By contrast, independent Senator Angus King said he would be supportive of some form of dialogue between Washington and Pyongyang.
President to president, I don't know, but I think it's never harmful to talk. And I'd much rather have some direct communications, whether it's at the Secretary of State level or even at the presidential level, rather than firing verbal fusillades.
President Trump spoke as the House of Representatives prepared to vote on tougher U.S. sanctions against North Korea, intended to curb cash flows Pyongyang uses to fund its weapons programs. Michael Bowman, VOA News, The Capitol.
Happening now in Asia, the Indian Army has accused Pakistani forces of killing two of its soldiers and mutilating their bodies along the border in the disputed Kashmir region. India has vowed retribution for the incident that will deepen tensions between the South Asian rivals whose relations have hit a low in recent months. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always always very happy when you're with us listening to VOA Asia. Thank you so much for joining us today. Taiwan will vent some new anger towards political rival China if the World Health Organization, dominated by Beijing allies, keeps Taiwan out of an annual assembly this month, despite rigorous lobbying from Taipei. Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen urged Beijing, one of the 192 World Health Organization members, to avoid standing in the way of an invitation to observe the WHO's May 22nd through 31st assembly. Taiwan has been invited every year since 2009. Tsai gets along poorly with the government in Beijing, and the issue has not come up since she took office in May 2016. While Taiwan is not likely to retaliate against China or the UN Health Agency in material ways, a long-term backlash from the Taiwanese public is possible. National Chung Sing University International Politics Professor Tsai Ming-young says another year of health assembly participation would help improve the atmosphere of cross-strait relations. He says if not, then Taiwan society reaction toward the pressure from Beijing on the path to participation in international events, even non-sensitive issues like health, will cast China in the wrong in terms of developing that atmosphere. The two sides dropped formal dialogue about a year ago and have sparred over tourism, military maneuvers, and the detention of a Taiwanese human rights activist in China. The two sides have been separately ruled since the 1940s, but China claims sovereignty over Taiwan. The island has just 21 diplomatic allies compared to more than 170 that recognize China, and that's snarling Taiwan's efforts at lobbying for entry to international agencies. The Taiwanese have said in government surveys since 2015 that they prefer today's level of autonomy from China over unification. They have long resented Beijing for using its clout as the world's second-largest economy to curb Taiwan's diplomatic recognition and role in international organizations. Taiwan cannot join the United Nations, and the UN International Civil Aviation Organization declined to let it observe a session in September. During the Olympics, Taiwan must call itself Chinese Taipei to imply a link with China. Cohen Blau is executive director of the Washington-based advocacy group Formosan Association for Public Affairs.
It always baffles me to see how badly the Chinese treat the Taiwanese. If I wanted to annex another country, I would charm the pants off the other country. So China blocking Taiwan joining international organizations does not enamor them to the people of Taiwan.
Some experts say Taiwanese people, stung by a WHO rejection, may pressure their president to approach China for dialogue. Tsai's predecessor's government talked regularly with China about economic issues, signed 23 agreements with Beijing, and was allowed to start observing World Health Assembly events. Tsai disputes Beijing's dialogue precondition that each side see itself as part of one China. The two have quit formal talks since she took office last May. Liu Yijian is a public affairs professor at Fuguang University in Taiwan.
I just don't see China would make any further concession at this moment. When the expectation was upgraded, and then when it cannot materialize, the kind of disappointment on the part of the Taiwanese gets the situation even worse.
The Taiwan government hopes to get updates from the WHO on international disease outbreaks and share its own experience in overseas health care. The island leadership has lobbied since 1997 for a spot in the WHO. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for bringing us this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Islamic State is claiming to have attacked and captured a volatile district from the rival Taliban in eastern Afghanistan. The Syrian-based terrorist group said both sides used light and heavy weapons in the fighting. The Taliban has not yet commented on the fighting. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Houston businesswoman Sandy Fan Gillis is back in the United States after being deported by China on Friday, where she spent 2 years in detention on an espionage charge. Before leaving China, she was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. She has denied the charge. The 57-year-old business consultant was arrested after attempting to leave the mainland for Macau in March 2015. She was held in detention for 6 months and not allowed to see a lawyer for 14 months. She was accused of trying to turn two Chinese spies into double agents. The San Francisco-based rights group Dui Hua was part of the effort along with her husband Jeff Gillis in seeking her release. Dui Hua, leader John Kam, tells VOA that improving U.S.-China relations was likely key in resolving the case.
For most of her time in detention, she was the only American accused of endangering state security, a very serious crime, espionage. Had she been convicted and put in prison, she would have been the first American since Jack Downey in 1973 to be in prison for spying for the United States. So, yes, a very significant case, significant in many ways. It certainly reflects the warming relationship between the two countries. This was done very much at high levels with some support from me and some others. But it was negotiated at a very high level. And in the end, it really was Secretary of State Tillerson who went to Beijing and got the final ball rolling.
Sandy Fan Gillis was part of a visiting U.S. delegation, but Kam says it remains unclear why Chinese authorities singled her out.
We don't know, of course, because the judgment has not been released by the court. No one has seen it, to the best of my knowledge. Maybe the lawyer has seen it by now. But the lawyer has gone on record to say that because the judgment and because the judgment in a case involving state secrets, he is not allowed to talk about it. So I'm afraid we don't know the reasons why she was singled out. She certainly was a very prominent booster of U.S.-China relations. She was president of one of the largest sister city associations in the country and, you know, had done a lot for U.S.-China relations.
One report says Fan Gillis was held for 6 months in a secret location before being transferred to a detention center in Guangxi, where she was initially kept in solitary confinement.
It's quite rare for an American citizen to be subjected to what is known as residential surveillance in a designated location. That is a coercive measure that allows the police to hold you in a designated location, but an unknown location, for up to 6 months without access to a lawyer or family. So for 6 months, Ms. Fan Gillis was held under residential surveillance in a designated location.
Do you see this as a unique case, or do you see this as a sign that other human rights matters may be resolved with the new relationship, apparently, between the U.S. and China?
I do, actually. I think that this is a very good sign.
John Kam said espionage is among the most serious of crimes in China, and her relatively light sentence bodes well for other foreigners who may be so charged. Our thanks to VOA's Victor Beatty for bringing us this report. Developing at this hour in Asia, U.S. Central Intelligence Agency Chief Mike Pompeo is in Seoul for talks with South Korean intelligence officials amid deep concerns about North Korea's nuclear weapons development program. Pyongyang declared Monday it would, quote, speed up its nuclear deterrence at the maximum pace. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, later this year, two pilots in a sailplane will try to break the world altitude record for a glider, soaring more than 27 kilometers above sea level. But as VOA's George Pudich reports, their primary mission will be to explore the little-known phenomenon called mountain waves and to carry a number of experiments designed by school students.
Close to the Sierra Nevada mountain range in the western United States, two pilots are preparing their fiberglass glider, Perlin 2, for a flight on a stratospheric wind called a mountain wave. For a long time, scientists assumed that the stratosphere is more or less a level layer of thin air between about 10 and 50 kilometers above sea level. Turns out that high mountain ranges create huge hurricane-speed waves of air at that height that impact our planet's weather. CEO of Perlin Project, Ed Warnock, spoke to VOA via Skype.
The Perlin Project is going to go explore these waves and determine the impact that it has on weather and on climate. It's also known that these waves are primary drivers of the ozone hole.
At about 3 kilometers above the sea level, the glider starts climbing on its own. Pilot Jim Payne says it has no heating, save for electric insoles in his and his co-pilot's boots. He also spoke via Skype.
The airplane is got a carbon fiber foam sandwich, so it's well insulated. Also, because it's pressurized, there are no air leaks that come into the cabin.
In July, the glider and its pilots will move to Argentina, closer to the South Pole, where they will try to break the world record for gliders of 15.5 kilometers and maybe reach as high as 27 kilometers or 90,000 feet.
The high altitude mountain wave, which allows us to go to 90,000 feet, occurs when the polar vortex is operative. The polar vortex occurs during the winter time at the pole.
The project is mainly funded by airplane manufacturer Airbus, which would also like to learn about stratospheric turbulences.
They're also interested because the conditions at 90,000 feet, which are our design limit, approximate Mars. And so someday someone will want to ask the question, can we use a winged craft on Mars to explore Mars? And they'll want to come look at the Perlin's data to find out how did the Perlin fly.
Perlin 2 will also carry a number of CubeSats, small 10-centimeter size scientific projects designed by school students, since another of the mission's goals is to inspire young people about science. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Well, back on the ground, I'm sure many of you have gone fishing at some point or another, or know somebody who has. Regardless if fishing is just to pass the time or for food or money, bait is usually needed. In the northern U.S. state of Maine, a mysterious decline in two of the most popular fishing worms is now depriving fishermen of their favorite bait. VOA's Faith Lapidus reports it's also threatening the livelihood of Maine's so-called wormers.
One of the most important ingredients for a successful day of fishing is found here on the mudflats of Maine, where worm harvesters like Dan Harrington dig for bloodworms and pileworms. The twisty fat wrigglers are sold to fishermen around the world. They're coveted as bait because they're a natural food for some fish. But there are not as many worms as there used to be. The harvest in Maine, the largest supplier of bait worms, has declined by more than half over the past decade. The catch of bloodworms, the most valuable species, was less than 137,000 kilos last year. Scientists don't know why.
This decline is worth watching because if it continues and there's been no change in effort by fishermen, then this indicates that there is, you know, something going on which is different than in the past, and we should be concerned about that.
Bait shop owners are already concerned.
If you don't have pile worms, you don't have the bait everybody wants. It's the number one bait for stripers at the moment. You know, we sell a lot of blood worms too, which also come from back east, and got to have them. If customers come in and we don't have them, they leave.
Whatever the reason for the decline, rising water temperatures, changes in currents that distribute worm larvae, or increased harvesting pressure, sport fishermen will continue to cast their lines, and Maine's wormers will continue their back-breaking work in the coastal muck. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and no matter how you're listening to us, through iTunes, SoundCloud, downloading our podcasts on VOA Asia Facebook, we are so happy that you've been listening with us. And a special shout out to all of our friends listening via the voice of Changzheng Star Radio FM 88.3 in Taiwan, and for all in Myanmar who are following us on Facebook at VOA Burmese. Thanks so much. Our thanks, too, to our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Daryl Smith, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.